extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, the man of the tournament, David Goss. I don't know how you're surviving. I don't know how much sleep you're getting, Dave, but Club and Country today is, I assume,
sleep, man, when you've got African teams throwing up 3 goals every game. You don't need sleep, baby. Ghana Black Stars have arrived.
We are in the middle of watching games, but this is a special MLS show. Just dropping in. I promise it's a 20-minute show, so strap in for 45 to 50 minutes of MLS talk. We're going to hit free agency. We're going to talk about all the rumors going around. Garth Lagerwey to Atlanta United. That might be the biggest move of the offseason. Doesn't matter who else gets signed other than maybe some guy named Lionel. All right, let's just jump in. Do it, Dave. Promo. Let people know you're producing a show every single day.
Yeah, we're every day at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Twitter Spaces Live and then coming out as a podcast. So you have to search MLS Today, which I've been promoting all year, so I hope you've heard that before. But then you get the feed for Club and Country Today, which is our World Cup show. Myself and the legend Bobby Warshaw on there. We've had Doyle on. We've had you on. Kalen refuses to come on because he only does classical media, like BBC, CNN, yeah, big-time network stuff.
He's a legacy media guy.
Local news. He's there for the local newscast, like the 6 p.m.
But I actually have a cutout head of Kalen that I leave in the room, so it feels like he's around. And we talk about what's going on in the World Cup. So we recap every day. We talk about some of our favorite moments, and then we get you previewed for the next day because I know the games start early, but I know I want like a little bit coming, so we talk about what's going on, and then we've obviously done a lot around the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and Costa Rica, so we get locked in.
Every time I log in on live on Twitter, you guys are mostly talking about food, I feel like.
It's the World Cup, baby.
Have we talked a lot about
it? I don't think we have, but it feels like Kalen's really popping in at a specific moment.
I gotta tell you, there's a South Korean fried chicken place that opened up across the street from me 6 months ago.
Is it called Mad Chicken?
It's called Cuckoo Chicken.
Okay, we have one Mad Chicken.
It's so good. South Korean food is just
bomb.
I just want it on the record. I was yelled at about timing. Oh my God, he's going to go 50 minutes. He promised us half an hour. We're talking about Cuckoo Chicken right now, which sounds delicious.
That's my bad. That's on me.
It's right. It's right next to a smoke shop.
When I come into Long Island City, I'm going to Cuckoo Chicken.
It's wild how much Wiebe hates small businesses. You know?
Yeah, she's Wiebe.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, we didn't talk about Walmart or something fancy.
Oh wow. Okay. All right. Let's talk quickly.
We're US Target show, by the way.
Iran. Yeah, I would be more of Target on that side of the.
Yeah.
Quick thoughts on USMNT Iran. US got a win. What do you see? What do you expect to see, Doyle? Like, what are we watching for here?
I do expect that Iran will come out on the back foot. We know that Carlos Quiroz has traditionally liked to play against the ball, and the US are going to have the ball and use it to break down what is always a really well drilled bunker. I don't know if they can do it. I would be more confident in our ability to advance if we were more threatening on set pieces. For the record, I thought that Pulisic's delivery on set pieces in the second game was very good. The runs were weird. It was like they were mistimed and they weren't all on the same page.
God, we should hire a set piece coach for that.
Hey, how about that?
We have one.
But I don't know. Like it should be – you could talk me into anything from 2-1 – U.S. to, 2-0 Iran on the break and like any score line, any permutation in between.
If the U.S. don't get through, how much of a, would it be a disaster? Is disaster the right word or is it the wrong word?
I think it's kind of a disaster. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like 2018 was a disaster, right?
Yeah.
In retrospect, was 2006 a disaster? No, it was just a bad tournament. If we get 3 draws from this, it's, I don't know, it's bad. And Berhalter shouldn't stay on if we don't get out of the group. But it's not a disaster. Or maybe it is.
It's not a FEMA.
I don't think it can
be. Let local government handle it. It's not FEMA. That's what you're saying.
I think it can't be a disaster if you're arguing with yourself internally trying to answer it, right? Like, to be a disaster, it has to be clear and it has to be clear and obvious. And it does not rise to the level of clear and obvious. So therefore, it's not. I would say the 06 group was a tougher group. So that, like, that's kind of, I think, going to be one of the reactions coming out of this is, like, if Wales looks like they did again in the next game, and Iran doesn't play up to the same level, or neither of these teams that do get out, if the U.S. doesn't go on and lose in the next round, I think then you'll look at it and say, well, this was an opportunity out there. But, you know, I think it'll also depend on how it plays out over the course of tomorrow. Like, if the U.S. doesn't generate a single chance and it looks like Germany versus U.S. in 2014, then I think that will cause a different reaction from people.
What do you think is going to happen, Kalen? What's your...
I'm feeling optimistic. I think it's going to be, you know, very tough game, but I think it's going to be more like the Wales game, I think, as far as dominating possession. And I think that game, you know, them not being able to close it out is a difference. So I think being able to push and put together more of like a second goal if they get an opportunity or shoot, I don't know. I think that's really where it comes. And I'm expecting to see Sargent come back into the team. Berhalter said he wasn't going to basically plug in place like way up top or one of the other guys is as a nine. I think he said that in the press conference today. So I think with the ball, and I think Sargent comes in kind of the way he did in Wales. Well, I actually thought he was pretty good in that game. He had some good hold up play and was useful in some ways that I think Haji Wright was good in the second match as well in some ways, but not, I think this game will suit Sargent. So I think we'll see him come back into the lineup. That's the
pushback I would offer there is like, isn't this the game that you have Jesus Ferreira for? Because you're going to be playing against a very compressed.
I feel like you shouted me down about that two nights ago.
Did I?
I don't know. I brought it up. I felt like it kind of got poo-pooed and walked
powers
out the door.
Of podcast osmosis. It just starts, it just gets into your
no,
brain.
No, Doyle, I'm with you, baby. Let's go. Keep it rolling. Keep the rock going.
You're playing against a team that's going to allow very little space between the lines. You want your center forward to sort of come out a little bit and get into the half spaces, maybe drag a center back with him in order to create that diagonal run for one of the wingers, whether it's, you know, Pulisic cutting in from the left or Weah cutting in from the right. I would still start Sargent because I still think we're significantly more likely to score off a set piece, and he is better in the air and he is better attacking set pieces than Jesus Ferreira. But just from the way Berhalter has managed this team, this feels like the Jesus Ferreira game to me.
So I agree with you. I think I net it out in the same spot, which is crosses and set pieces keep a Haji Wright or Josh Sargent in this game because Ferreira doesn't offer as much in those spots. But if you were ever going to play him, this would be the one.
All right, we'll see. Watch along YouTube and Twitch. Susanna, Charlie Davies, Stephen Betashore, who, of course, was on that 2014 Iran team in Brazil. Doyle's on the post game. Watch live, man. It's been fun. We've had banter. We've had drama. We've had nervousness. Apologies. We haven't mentioned Canada here. So I'll just say right now, man, it sucks to see Canada out. But, Dave, you and I will we'll have a final 90 minutes of Canada celebration, see what they can do. Maybe they can get a win against Morocco in their final game, even if, though, they're out of the tournament. But you can take a listen to the postgame show on the YouTube page. It's really good. And Club and Country had the postgame show afterwards with Dave and Bobby. So shout out to Canada. They've been inspirational, just didn't have the results, didn't have the final piece in this tournament. But this is not the end of the journey for them. Shout out to Landon Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley, and Lauren Holiday into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. I think this is a very good class. I really am happy and satisfied with the way the new voting mechanisms have worked for National Soccer Hall of Fame. We are getting people in quickly who deserve to be there. And I think this class is a really good wrap up of that. Lauren Holiday, a player that maybe didn't have the same sort of like, you know, hey, World Cup winning resume that some of the women's national team folks have. And it's an easy push for them in there. But she was incredible on the club level. And I like that she got in both on her club play as well as her national team play. And then Landon and DeMarcus are just like, no duh, obvious, vote them straight in. So I thought it was cool the way they revealed it as well. Lauren in the, I think the Bucks facility with her husband. Very cool reveal for her. And then Landon and DeMarcus in Qatar on the stage with Fox. Clint Dempsey coming out, dapping him up. And it seemed like it really meant something to them. So red jackets for all of them. That is awesome. And let's get to MLS. Garth Lagerwood, Atlanta United, Doyle. This is, I'm going to say it right now. I think other than Lionel Messi, if that somehow comes out during this offseason, this is the biggest, most influential signing in Major League Soccer in this transfer window, bar none, easy. This is an incredible job for Garth. This should be scary for the Eastern Conference.
Yes. And I wrote that in my postmortem for Atlanta and for Chicago and for Seattle, because those were the three possible landing spots. It felt like that this was potentially the most important free agency signing in league history. And Garth's not a player. He's a GM. But we all see what he did with Seattle over the past 7-8 years. I mean, the man basically GM'd the league to death. The ability to find good players via almost every available mechanism, the ability to sort of execute with clarity how he wants to build the roster and create depth at basically every spot. It was a masterclass year after year after year, and the culmination was them winning the CCL this past spring. And then why would you leave? Well, the answer is that Seattle doesn't really play at the big boys table in terms of transfer fees anymore, right? Like, they went out and they got Albert Rusnak last winter as a free agent because, first of all, he helped massively in the CCL run, but also I don't think they have the finances to go out there on the market and get a 27-year-old free agent attacking midfielder who you know is going to be able to contribute at a good level and who's not only an upgrade for the 2022 season, but is also the heir to Nico Ladero, who's coming at the end of his, the end of his run. He'll be 34 this year. I think that just Atlanta's playing at a completely different level when it comes to transfer fees and talent acquisitions. And I think everybody knows that, right? The only teams that are really there are Toronto and maybe the two LA teams, though we haven't even really seen that from LAFC recently. Like, they've been falling on a budget, relatively speaking. So this, it gives Garth the chance to go out and spend $15 million on one player and $15 million on another. It gives him a chance to do for that Atlanta Academy what he's done for the Sounders Academy. And I assume that this is going to lead to some coaching turnover as well. One thing with Garth Lagerwey, he's been GM in this league 15 years. I don't think he's ever hired his own head coach. He didn't hire Brian Schmetzer, right? Like Schmetzer was made interim and then sort of won the job, like appropriately won the job with what he did down the stretch in 2016 and then winning MLS Cup that year. He wasn't the guy who hired Jason Kreis in Salt Lake. And like, that's it. Those are the head coaches that Garth Lagerwey, well, in 6 months of Ziggy, that's it. So I expect that this is the start of a pretty significant makeover for Atlanta. And given how bad Atlanta has been since the start of the 2020 season, I don't think Atlanta fans are I think they will welcome a makeover.
So you're saying they're going to be insufferable soon? If they are not, no, I'm just kidding, Atlanta fans. That's you, Seattle. That's you. No, okay. Garth is the president and chief executive officer. That's a good note to add here, and I'll let you jump in, Caitlin. But this is what he's been looking for 15 years, is this level of control, which goes to what you're saying, Doyle, about hiring, about shaping an organization. Like, he's always sort of had some level of handcuffs as to what he can do, whether he's just sort of siloed into the soccer space, whether he has inherited sort of coaches or executives around him. Yeah, I'm not. I don't know anything about what's going to happen in Atlanta, but he will have the opportunity to do those things. Top three incoming transfers in the history of MLS, all Atlanta United.
Right, but not all of them worked out, right? And I think that's part of the problem is like they've gone out and spent money and dropped a bunch of bags off, but it hasn't quite fit on the pitch. And so you kind of need somebody to come in and really begin to like put the pieces together in a way that that makes sense and to really have a plan. And each time they've gone out with Seattle, I mean, Garth hasn't gone out and got coaches, but when you go look at the players he's gotten, there's not a lot of misses. You know, right. So I think you, if you're Atlanta, you're going to feel good about that. And from, you know, from our perspective, I mean, Atlanta has been just kind of a, you know, a mess in a lot of ways over the last year or two. And I think when the league, when they were elite in the team, it was one of the best teams we've ever seen. And so I think the idea that they could sort of get their way back to that is it's one of the, we've been talking about it, is like, how do teams go out and take somebody else's, like sporting director? Do they go out and get the best coaches? We'll see what happens with Wilfred Nancy. People have tried to go after Jim Curtin, like going after proven successful coaches and people sort of behind the scenes, I think is kind of a, I think this could be maybe a moment where other clubs start to look around and see if they can pick off coaches like this, or excuse me, sporting directors like this from places and provide a new opportunity.
Yeah, it's good on the cap too, by the way. Can I just say that? Like you said, the biggest signing, the reason why it might be is because it can affect every other signing without counting it all against your salary cap. Yeah. The limitations you have don't apply. Like Garth's the one that will shape those things. You don't go spend a transfer fee on him. You don't have to amortize it over 4 years. You don't have to use TAM or GAM or any of the many resources that he will now maximize. You just got to go give him control and pay him his money. And you saw what happened for Seattle.
Yeah. So the point, you're absolutely right, Weeby. And that's why it's such a big signing. And the same thing applies to great coaches. Like if Wilfred Nancy ends up in Columbus and is as good there as he was in Montreal. But the point I want to make with regards to Atlanta, for the past 4 years, they acquired a lot of talent, but they did it thoughtlessly. Like they did not have a vision of how these pieces, like Marcelino Moreno, he's a good player, man, but like he does not work with the other guys on that team because they got 75 guys who want the ball to feet and nobody who actually stretches the field, which could use as a segue into the Derek Etienne Jr. news. The other thing I want to mention is that Atlanta has basically not had an analytics department, which is unconscionable for a team that has invested so much in across every aspect of having a team, you know, every aspect of the franchise. They have been almost, you know, basically top notch, but the analytics department has been, you know, vestigial. Seattle were among the leaders for a decade in terms of that. They hired Ravi, who, you know, one of the two OGs in MLS analytics front offices.
I think I say Dave Tenney in this as well, yeah. As far as the sports science side and the use of analytics there.
Yep. And so I would expect Atlanta to go from 0 to 100 real quick on that aspect of team building. And I think once you have, you know, good GM and good analytics department, like you stop missing on as many big signings as Atlanta has done over the past few years.
Look, regardless of big signings as well, Garth gets all the sort of little glue signings right. Or has gotten them right. I mean, look, you don't know what's going to happen in the future, but his track record's pretty good. As far as we go back to maximizing the cap, like how do you use all these different mechanisms? How do you fill the different slots within the salary cap in the right way and find the guys that fit and can be contributors, whether it's veterans or, you know, whether they're homegrowns or whether it's draft picks? He's done a pretty good job of that, and Seattle's trophy case reflects that. So we have Nick hitting us up, says, on a scale of 1 to MLS Cup parade, how much should we celebrate the arrival of Garth Lagerwey in Atlanta? It feels like trending toward MLS Cup parade because that's what's at stake here for you, Five Stripes. If you were Garth, what would you keep or change? I think we kind of addressed that one. Garrett hit us up and how big of a fumble was it for the Fire to miss out on Garth? He's a local guy who could provide some big-time experience to roster building. I'll throw this one to you, Dave. The fumble for the Fire, but also what's it mean for Seattle now?
So the fumble for Chicago, I don't think I have words to express it, so I'm just going to leave it as unconscionable. I don't believe he interviewed, if I'm correct. So the best GM in all of soccer in North America, who's from your city, you did not even look at. But nailed all the FC Basel signings, so they have that going for them. On the Atlanta side, it's pretty big. Now, I do want to say, and this has just been going through my mind since it happened, I don't think the turnaround this year will be the same as FC Cincinnati, because Joel talked about the coach. Gonzalo Pineda is the head coach of this team. He was Brian Schmetzer's assistant, and I don't know that he was the coach that Garth Laguerre would have hired in leaving that program and saying, I want to bring in my own coach. So I don't know what the relationship there will be, and I think that will probably stunt a little bit of what goes on at the beginning. Plus, this roster has a lot already on it that you have to deal with. But it's as big a move as Atlanta could make, as you guys have all said. So you should be celebrating it. And we have to go back to RSL. It's not just that Garth ended up in Seattle. Seattle's a good team. He got good players and it all happened. Like, he's built more than one winner in MLS, and he's built it now over every single error. So there's a pretty high level of confidence that he's capable of doing it again. And when people ask why and what, and you talk about talent, it's all about process. He's one of the most intelligent people in the league, and he has process to what he does. And so when you look at what Atlanta did previously and what he has done well, it's all about having a process set in place so that nothing catches you off guard and you can continue to make good decisions because everything's thought out ahead of time and not reacting. But it will be interesting to also see who Garth puts together as his talent scouting, because that was a big part of what worked in Seattle was Chris Henderson. Chris then went to Miami. Chris's brother was a big part of what he did as well. Craig Weibel is, who I think a lot of us expect to be elevated into Garth's previous role Weibel's in Seattle.
Like a sharp guy. He's yeah. a sharp guy, and things are not empty in Seattle after this. You know, they still have, I think, a top five or six roster in the league. They'll still be able to attract free agents. They have a, an academy that's churning out good young players, and we've seen over the past couple of years more of a willingness from Brian Schmetzer to use those young players. Though that is something that Garth talked about, I think, 3 weeks ago before this all happened. And one of his last interviews as GM, he basically said, like, we need to be better on that front.
You know, and that, by the way, is how Seattle gets from what you said of they're not the highest spending team to being able to compete, is generating money through sales. Garth built out one of the best academies, and they have not really pushed those players through to be able to sell them.
Yeah. So, but that is the next 5 years for the Sounders, right? They still have Jordan Morris. They still have the Roldans. They have
Roldan's on the last year of his deal.
They'll keep him.
Okay.
I think they'll keep both of them. You know, they have good center backs. They'll probably try to sell Nuhu after this tournament. They have two really good young keepers who can replace Stefan Fry. So, like, they're not going to disappear entirely. But if they're going to still compete at the level that we've come to expect from them since 2009, they need to get more internally. They need to be a team that can develop more Jordan Morris's and more Christian Roldan's. And they have the raw materials for that. And like I said, Weibel's a sharp guy. If he gets the job, he'll be able to kick over some rocks and find more talent for this team on a budget.
Right, for Atlanta, let me turn the page just a little bit here. And we've heard Dab God to Atlanta for a while. If you don't know who Dab God is, you've been listening for a while. Maybe you're new, Derek Etienne. Speaking of analytics darlings, he would be one of those guys who the numbers really like, Kalen. Would Dab God to Atlanta be a move you could see Garth making in free agency?
Yeah, and I think part of what we saw with Atlanta and where the pieces didn't fit was they didn't have a ton of, they went out and got some international signings, but I don't think a lot of the domestic players really worked out, or that they found great value. And then the best versions of Atlanta United, we saw the Julian Gressels, we saw the Michael Parkhurst, we saw some of those guys who had come through, at least through college or free agency or, you know, interleague trades. And, you know, that's just a part of the formula across MLS. If you want to be successful, you look at the success that Montreal have had, you look at the success that Colorado have had in their good year. That's been important. And so even, you know, all those clubs, look at LAFC even going out and getting players that have winning experience and finding people like that, like Ilya Sanchez. And I think Etienne is one of those guys for me that, to Doyle's point, yeah, can stretch the field, give them something, especially from wide positions. They've tried to kind of like plug and place people that don't really fit there. Very natural fit for him to be on the outside. And then for me also, he makes the players around him, I think. He worked well with Zellerian. So if you think of the profile of how he might be able to help out a Moreno, or he might be able to fit in well with an Almada or some of the pieces that they have, he makes a ton of sense. And then when it comes to the playoffs, he's on my list always of guys where in a big game, who's a guy that I really trust and I think can find a big moment. And Atlanta is surely going to have aspirations to, you know, get to MLS Cup and get back to that sort of place. And I think we've seen Etienne in general always seem to find those moments in big matches.
Who had a better season last year, Derek Etienne or Araujo?
Derek Etienne. I think Araujo had one of the worst seasons in the league.
Yeah, I know. That was an easy answer. So there you go. There's the dunk for you. All right, keeping it moving. The Times says some guy named Lionel Messi, it's done to Inter Miami. There's nothing new here, folks. It's the exact same details we've had and been reading about for a while now, that if Messi came to MLS, he'd be the highest paid player in league history. Oh my God. What? Can't believe it.
And he
if
it also happened, obviously would call up a random British newspaper and tell them
the
first.
Times. The Times would be the one.
Because they've been so in, you know, deep in the camp in Argentina and Barcelona over the last
Times,
years.
Actually, the Times, they broke the Jake Nowinski to St. Louis City.
Whoa, so they do have Times of London.
They're right there. You know what? You saw that photo from Cincinnati of Matt Hedges on the board. That was their sources unearthed that as well. Man. So they're really locked in. In the haunted city of Ohio as well. But Taylor Twellman does say here that Sergio Busquets to Inter Miami is 99% done, and that they're moving on this. Okay, Luis Suarez is now a free agent. Nacional, he left them. The Times is also linking Cesc Fabregas, who I have a hard time believing would leave the shores of Lake Como, where he's playing in Serie B, to go to Miami. What about Suarez? What about Busquets? Doyle, I know you're a Barca guy from way back. How does Busquets fit into all this?
Oof. I don't love it.
I'm so excited to hear this.
I love Sergio Busquets as a player, but you know, one of the things that really worked for Miami last year was having Jean Mota and Gregory together at behind a playmaker, and that gave them a lot of coverage, and those guys are pretty classy on the ball. But it was basically about shrinking the field so that it was Pozuelo, for the most part, could go wherever he wanted and do whatever he wanted. And if you have Busquets in there, I mean, he's brilliant. He's arguably the best defensive midfielder of all time. He does not have what I would consider MLS range. The way Barcelona plays, the way Spain plays, they have so much of the ball, and they're so compact in every phase of play that it compensates for his lack of physicality in terms of running down a play that might have gotten away from them. No MLS team is ever going to exert that much control over the game. None. It doesn't matter how hard you nail the all three DPs and you get every signing right. You're not going to have that much control of the game. And in that scenario, even a player as great as Sergio Busquets, and again, he's maybe the greatest D-mid of all time, can and will be exposed.
I agree with everything Doyle says. I think what we all expect is if it gets you messy, then you do it.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And that's sort of...
It's all good for us, man. Those KPIs through the roof.
But I think that's if, you know, if this is your Dominic Crescito signing, then you do it because Messi's Messi.
But with Messi, it makes even less sense.
100%.
He's not defending.
Kalen, spoilers
for you. Need like four Diego Charas behind you running around. Like there's no.
Kalen, spoilers for you. And I know you very similar to LeBron James feel one way, but players do not make the best GMs while they are playing. Right. So I don't know that that's what Messi's
owners,
focused on.
You mean owners.
Yeah. What TBD on that? Well, what about Suarez?
Suarez still has juice. Like Suarez would still be good in MLS.
Yeah.
If you're signing him as a DP center forward, I think you're going to get 2,500, maybe 3,000 good minutes across all competitions, and he still presses.
Would you say better than your brother Higuain? Would he be better in MLS?
I think
that's the bar.
I think he would be better than my doppelganger, Fit Pizza.
Come on, don't do Dave like that.
Yeah.
Don't be Dave's doppelganger. Although your beard's a little more unruly.
No, everyone knows Doyle's Gonzalo. Everyone knows that. I'm the hipster's favorite. Doyle's the mainstream one.
The thing is, though, if you look at the way Miami's... I'm getting into the nitty-gritty of Miami's roster build, but, like, bring back Leo Campana as a young DP, mm-hmm. then sign a DP winger, right? Someone who will run, someone who does not need the ball, someone who will get onto the end of all those messy through balls because he's going to hit, like, he's in the Valderrama stage of his career. He's going to mostly walk, and every touch is going to be an inch perfect through ball, and it's going to be glorious. But you need someone to run onto the end of it. Spend a DP slot there.
Ariel Lassiter.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Perfect.
Didn't
that is the most perfect MLS thing of all time. Messi hitting through balls to Ariel Lassiter.
But didn't Pipe play it through to Lassiter?
Exactly. Well, like, how do you think the big dog got 26 goals, man? It was getting on to the end of those Pipe through the balls.
There is precedent for this.
I don't know. We'll see. Here's a question from Bard. What international player of the age of 35 makes the biggest positive impact coming to an MLS team? Which team gets them from where? The more unconventional the pick, the better, he says. I went through all, you know, I did a little transfer market expiring contracts research here. Luka Modric would be one coming out of contract. I believe he's 37. He can play. Olivier Giroud? That Olivier Giroud to New York City FC? That could be legit. Edin Dzeko, also coming out of contract. Sergio Ramos, in case Inter Miami just wants to go all freaking in. What do we think about any of those four? Could you place them in MLS? Would you like to see them in MLS? Where would you want to see them? How about Luka Modric? Where would you place him? What?
He could be a replacement for Mihailovic in Montreal.
There you go.
That could happen. I'm going to say Giroud NYCFC. Dave is exasperated.
I think what the rumor we heard was Luka at DC United, so I'll just reconnect that.
Did we hear that?
Wasn't that a rumor like 5 years ago when everyone thought he was done pre-2018 World Cup?
I thought that was Ozil.
Yeah,
I thought both of them got a little mention at some point. I don't think Luka Modric owns a coffee shop, so
I was just going to make
there's less of a connection there. But yeah, I'll put him on DC United because I thought I heard that one time. And I'm pretty sure Giroud could play for any team in MLS. Like, he's a big, successful target forward that everyone can play off of. So
Colorado Rapids replacing Jossi.
That is, you know, he asked us for the weirder the better. The more unconventional, the better. Yeah.
How about FC Cincinnati after they sell Brenner? They just swap him out for Giroud.
In other news, FC Cincinnati appear to be doing some good business. So Tom Bogart reporting that FC Cincinnati have signed rising Ecuador international midfielder Marco Angulo from Independiente del Valle. $3 million transfer fee. He's going to be a U22 guy, so that fits well in the cap. He's 20. He's a number 8. He just barely missed the World Cup roster, apparently, but made his international debut before the World Cup. Big talent. FCC tracking for a while. I haven't watched him, but this... You know, we're talking about Garth Lagerwey and how much a GM can change things. Chris Albright, come on down. You know, I did like, what should MLS teams be thankful for over Thanksgiving? And oh my God, Cincinnati should be thankful that Philly just had a glut of coaching and front office guys that could just move on over and take over things on their side. So we'll see what that signing's about. Here's an interesting question, though, from Paul Harvey. Where do you get the most bang for your buck for a DP?
26-year-old number 10 who... has had success on multiple continents.
Prep for that question or just quickly?
I wrote this column last year.
Okay.
In fact, I wrote it like 2 days before Seattle won CCL. What is the model for building a team? And in MLS, like around the world, the classic number 10. I don't want to say around the world. In Europe, the classic number 10 doesn't really exist anymore because of the climate and because of the level of tactical sophistication at the top level of the game. Spaces get compressed too quickly. So you need to have a different way of building chances. In MLS, in Argentina, in Brazil, in the Netherlands, outside of the top level of the game, classic number 10s still exist, and this league is dominated by them. And the model from Javier Morales to Diego Valeri to Nico Ladero to Lucho, like less so with Lucho Acosta because he didn't have the success in two different leagues, but still, is get a guy who's in his prime, who's wildly talented, and is maybe not going to make it in one of the top 25 teams in the world. That's your first DP. Your second DP, to me, is a defensive midfielder. But, you know, you could go in different directions with that. There's a strong argument that you should just spend on a great number nine. The hit rate on great number nines is very, very high. But the hit rate on classic number 10s for your first DP in MLS is absurd. Like, think of the best players of the past 10 years in this league.
Let's throw them out. Hani Mukhtar maybe doesn't have the exact profile you're talking about here because he just had success in Denmark, but it is close in his prime. Sebastian Driussi, I would say, is this player for sure.
Yep.
Carlos Hill. Lucas El Arayan is probably a guy that you would file under under that one as well.
Babelo Reynoso.
Carlos Vela was a little bit outside of your 26-year-old range, but success.
Same with Maxi Morales. Maxi Morales was 29 when he came over, but he's been as good as Nico Ladero.
Alejandro Pozuelo.
Mm-hmm. Sasha Kljestan fit the bill when he came over in 2015. He's 28, I think, at that point.
Mauricio Pereira.
Yep.
Daniel Gazdag, not in multiple countries, but in that same age range, at least. I know you're giving me the eyes.
Mauricio Pereira. I don't know that that's okay. I don't.
They just want a trophy.
Yeah,
Dave.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I'm watching Gilberto Silva take selfies.
Yeah. How dare you? Here's a question from Jonathan. Where is Sifu going? Where would you send Sifu? What league?
I'm pretty sure coming out of this World Cup, it's going to be England, based on the success of Moises Caicedo and Estupian and all the other guys in the Ecuador team and what they've done, and then already some of them playing in England, that most likely you're going to get the most money, and that's probably going to be the move. But either way, it's going to be one of the big, I'm going to say, three leagues.
Yeah, I was going to say Bundesliga. Just feel like that sort of the transition play fits in pretty well in that sense. All right, here's a question for a resident Canadian expert and sometime resident David Goss. Now what for Montreal? So we have Celtic have apparently reached a verbal agreement with Montreal to sign Alistair Johnson on a permanent deal, waiting final details. That's from Fabrizio Romano. There are rumors coming out of England that Watford want Ismail Kone. We know that others could go. We already know that Georgie is gone. Wanyama seems to be gone, though, God, who knows on that one. Maybe something could happen. And David Weiss says, how are Montreal even going to field a competitive team? Maybe Nancy gone, too.
Yeah, Nancy being gone or staying is obviously a massive part of this. Because if he's gone, I don't even know that you care. Like, you kind of just rebuild and you start over. And that's probably going to be the nature, we should talk about this, of some teams in MLS, if they are selling teams that don't then spend money to refill their ranks. And it happened to FC Dallas, right? They were competitive. They sold some players. They changed coaches, struggled a little. Then they came back over the last year. So that's a big part of it. But I would argue that, and I've said this a few times, a lot of the pieces are in place. Mason Toys, they hope, is the next Georgi Mihailovic. Like, that's the point of that move. Doyle has spoken for the last year about Rita Zuhir, who they hope is not the same type of player, but the next Ismail Kone. And they sent six players out on loan across the CPL this year that they are very high on coming through their academy. And they went and traded for Chinosi Ofors, players like that. They have already put in place the process to try and find the next set of guys that made them successful. There will never be a 100% hit rate on this. And if you don't spend the money, you don't get the floor to be safe in the bad years and great in the good years. But that, I think the key for them is to keep that identity so that you are the team that the next Georgi Mihailovic says to his agent, that's where I want to go. I know they'll build the team around me. I want to be who I think I am. For example, an Eric Williamson.
Yeah.
What's he saying to his agent? He's saying, I believe I'm better than what Portland allows me to be. Where can I go and be that? And a lot of teams will offer it. And you hope most agents are paying attention and say, they say that. But look, you know, Houston tells you that. Well, Ace is there, right? There's a lot of teams in this league that can't do that. Montreal has shown they can. I think they just have to maintain that identity. And you also probably then have to pick the one or two guys you're really going to pay Kamal Miller might be one of them. Do you give him a huge contract and say, hey, we want you to be the backbone when other guys leave? And if you have him and Joel Waterman, Zachary Broguiart, they'll be good enough to stand up. And if some of the talent, like a Mason Toy, elevates themselves to that next level, which is possible, they could be even better.
Kyoto's still going to be there. Kai Kamara's going to be back, I believe. Love that you went with the Mason Toy reference off the jump. Golden Boot draft, stand up. But yeah, if I'm Montreal, I'm telling all the young Canadian players out there, and we know there are a ton of really good ones, that we're the route that you want to take for playing time and to make the jump that you want to make.
Well, this is the interesting part. If Wilfred Nancy leaves, I've heard that Bobby Smyrniotis was interviewed last time. He created the Sigma Academy out of Brampton, wow, which produced Kyle Larin, Tejan Buchanan, four or five other players on this World Cup team. He has now worked in Hamilton over the last few years, and we think homegrown territories will change. Even if they don't, you can still talk to players and trade for them and give stuff up. That's a really interesting way for Montreal to continue to sort of push that.
We shall see. I'm going to throw out Yohan Dame as well, who was, of course, the FCC interim coach, now at the Galaxy, but was a Montreal Academy coach for a number of years, and would seem like a fit as well, depending on what they want to do. All right, free agent updates. We'll get on out of here. Caitlin, let's start with this. Matt Hedges is going on a 5-city tour.
Let's go, free agents.
He was in Cincinnati. He was in Toronto.
Fire up the PJ.
Yes, in Toronto. They put him... They put him on the court side for the Raptors.
No, ringside for the Maple Leafs.
No, even bigger, ringside for the Maple Leafs. Yeah. I just assumed it was the Raptors.
No,
they're breaking out the caviar for Matt Hedges.
I've never seen a free agent right in front row seats, man. I can't believe it. It still shocks me.
Whoa, Drew Moore, don't disrespect. Drew Moore got Raptors tickets. They were in the lower bowl.
No, I'm happy for all my free agent kings out there getting theirs. No, this is my favorite time of year just to log on and watch. I've always thrown it in the group chat because I'm just like, it blows my mind. One, that free agency exists. It still feels like a fever dream to me. Two, the fact that these guys are flying around on private jets, getting their names on billboards, sitting in front row. Like, I love it. I love it. It's the best time of year. Hedges, I would say, Toronto looks interesting to me, not just because the floor seats, but I think as far as that project, where it is now, where it's set to go, and how important a center back would be for them. So I think that would be a really good fit for him. And yeah, some other ones that stood out. Let's see. Tyler Miller went to DC. That feels like a good one, with Bill Hamid gone.
David Ochoa seems to be on his way to Liga MX to San Luis. So that broke down.
Yep. So that one fits. I think with Dane St. Clair really owning that spot now, a move for Miller made sense, and DC, that was a big sore spot for them. So
let me read a quick tweet here, because Minnesota fans were a little confused about this. Nick, hey Gundy, I understood Minnesota United keeping Tyler Miller in case Dane St. Clair got hurt last year because Eric Dick probably wasn't MLS ready, but now letting Miller sign elsewhere as a free agent and re-signing Dick is just mind-numbing to me. Was our front office asking too much for Miller last year? There were rumors that Miller was a potential trade target for some teams.
I've heard from multiple GMs across the league, or chief soccer officers across the league, that yes, they were asking too much for Tyler Miller.
Well, there you have it. Pedro Santos, also from Columbus to DC.
I spoke about process and long-term planning earlier. That's the differences. Continue.
Okay, I will continue. Houston trying to get their process and long-term planning right. They signed Andrew Tarbell, and they traded for Artur from the Crew, who, of course, Pat Onstead knew well from his time there. It was $300K.
Pretty sure Pat Onstead signed, right?
Yeah, I think so.
He'd come to Columbus even before Greg got there, which was when Pat was running the team.
Yeah, I think so. I couldn't. Don't nail me down on that right now. The timeline for multiple MLS teams like 8 years ago, it's difficult. But $300K in allocation money seems like a good signing for Houston on the Artur side. St. Louis signs Jake Nowinski, of course, broken first by the Times. So I just want to say that one person on this show threw out Jake Nowinski as a good target for St. Louis. Always seemed to make sense.
His name mentioned around the expansion draft?
Yeah, I threw him out there as a possible target. We didn't hear it from them when we were there, but I was always like, this just kind of makes sense.
Kalen goes, wasn't someone talking about it? As Weeby stands behind him, goes, they should sign Jake Nowinski.
I think it was Weeby, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
That was a sort of mediocre MLS hit that I have to just keep pushing
the replay.
Yeah. Oh, What? Who? What? Orlando City signed Mauricio Pereira to a 2-year deal and Felipe to a 1-year deal.
Oh my God. That is, that might be one step too far. Felipe at Orlando City.
Be careful your preseason predictions for Orlando. You better get it right.
That's a playoff team if I've ever seen one. I'll tell you that right now. Who should sign Sebas Mendez, Dave? We've seen him in the World Cup playing super well. He's a free agent in MLS. He got his 4 years. Can they hold on to him? That's the question. He's out of contract. You know, talking about Sifu, maybe Sebas Mendez is going to be heading
I would be surprised if he played in Major League Soccer next year. If he's going to start 2 group stage games and be a free agent, that means he can go and get paid out because there's no transfer fee. So, yeah, that would be a shock to me.
That would be a shock to me as well. Tom Bogert, 2022 Stage 2 Reentry Draft, Round 1 results. This is the good stuff. Doyle, I've got 10 minutes allocated for you to hit this as hard as you would like. New England trade up to select Bobby Wood. That's the kick in the tires. I love Bobby, but
there's nothing more Bruce Arena than taking an injured veteran forward to
with USMNT connect
with USMNT connections to.
How about this though? Toronto, they grab Victor Vasquez.
Back.
I actually like, so I'm going to jump on this. I actually like this. I think every team in the league should have one wildly skillful veteran on the bench who's like, we just need you for 20 minutes a game. Don't worry about being 90 minutes fit. As long as you're willing to give us everything for 20 minutes a game and come change the game with your passing in Vasquez's case, or dribbling as we had with Ilsenio and Vicente Sanchez before that.
Like, Chinte.
I was begging Steve Ralston in Houston. He was our assistant. And I was like, you're the best player on the team. You're hurting us right now by not giving us 15, 20 every match.
The key is they have to be willing to accept the 15, 20 pay, right? Like you got, it's got to be.
This is like Sasha last year for the Galaxy. Ilsenio would be a classic example. Yep. Chinte is just the. That really gives you the nostalgia right there.
It's like with five subs nowadays, it's like this isn't just us memeing. Like the game and the way you manage second halves, it's changed. And I think smart teams are going to try to figure out how to best leverage that.
Also, let's take the next level. Victor Vasquez likes Toronto. Who do you want better as an academy coach for your kids? Like you are now drafting future academy coaches and assistant coaches for your team.
Hell yeah. San Jose, Michael Baldissimo. I know this one got you jacked up.
You know I love Michael Baldissimo.
I forgot that I was saving that one for you. I accidentally tossed you the Victor Vasquez.
Yeah. No, I've been told by people that Michael Baldissimo came off the charts even more than Alfonso Davies at times in the academy. Baldy Hive, let's go. This is his spot.
And then Houston Dynamo getting a Chara from Toronto. We'll see.
He's really good six times a year when he's healthy in place.
Yeah, that's the problem. Here's a final question we'll get on out here. Carlos Whitaker asks, up-and-coming center backs in MLS that could challenge for the USMNT 2026, or will that always be more of a veteran position? Do we have any names that would be next generation, or right now you would say, hey, that's a possibility for 2026?
2026 might be far away. The obvious names would be the youth national team guys. So Brandon Craig in Philly, who actually was on the bench for every playoff game, but is nowhere close to playing. Tony Leone at LAFC, who's dual national, but people are very high on him. I believe the Galaxy actually have a couple for Cranus, as well as Jalen Neal, who are around the first team. So those are guys that
Do we know how close to citizenship Jack Elliott is? I'm not memeing here. Like if he gets a citizenship within the next couple of years, like he would immediately be part of the national team picture.
Miles Robinson would be.
Yeah, we'll be 29. Yeah, he'll be 29.
Yeah, but the presumption is that if Miles Robinson and Chris Richards are both healthy over the next 4 years, that those, like in the ideal world, that's the starting center back pairing in 2026. But
I love that we were projecting this where like Tim Ream came back and is now like our strongest defender and you're like 35. Yeah, it's hard to project 2026 roster.
Yeah. So Walker's like, there's power in the man bun. Tim has shown me the way here, or maybe he showed Tim the way. I don't know who had that look first, but
I just want all our listeners to know that Anders is in is in the chat saying Jackson Reagan is the correct answer.
Oh, shout out my guy Tommy Williams, by the way. I still believe.
What, Winder in Louisville? Would he have a
Yeah, a Josh Widener. He's awesome.
He's very good. Yeah. Very good young player.
Okay. That's it for us. Back to the World Cup we go. Club and Country Today on the MLS Today feed. Just in case you get confused, you're searching Club and Country. It's MLS Today. Go check that out. Dave and Bobby. Doyle jumps in with some very intelligent soccer takes, and I get on and talk about Dark Helmet every now and then. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys. It's been a good Monday. We'll see you on the back end. Adios.
Go USA.
We'll be right back.